I want to say that, Richard, I am very much in... Stop. That I am enjoying the Garden of Sinners one.
Mm-hmm.
But Boogie Pop or whatever the heck it is.
Yep. Boogie Pop and the others.
Yeah, no. No. I can't. I just... No, I can't follow it.
See, that's...
I can usually follow some disjointed stuff, but yeah. I can't follow it. And I'm just like, what's the storyline here? Like, I just can't get into the storyline.
No, but that's the whole reason why I got inspired for that in the next episode, because of how disjointed it is. Like, it's been... Like, have you guys watched episode 5 of Garden of Sinners yet?
Nope, we haven't started.
Okay. Because that one's really disjointed, too. But it's also just one episode. But
it's also 2 hours.
Yeah, it's also 2 hours. But, Boogie Pop starts with the first episode being, I think, also the last episode. And it's very, very, like, very disjointed in terms of, like, stuff happening. Because I don't think it's even the last episode of the arc, even though I think some people mm-hmm. thought it was. Because,
right.
Now that the show's over, the last episode just came out, that it's really, really all over the place a little bit. Some of the arcs are a little bit easier to follow than the first one. It's just the first three episodes are very, very all... Like, I've never seen a plot line cut up mm-hmm. like this, the first three episodes mm-hmm. in Boogie Pop.
And so for amateurs, which Brooke definitely is, obviously, this is her first... for an anime overall, but for me as well, I mean, I'm not a huge anime veteran. Like, I feel that having an ultra disjointed pop or disjointed plot like Boogie Pop, combined with the subtitles having to read,
oh yes,
is extremely difficult. And even like Garden of Sinners, where it is disjointed, but it flows really well, and it really is an amazing series. I'm enjoying it a lot. It also, like, for somebody who's just not used to reading the novel with every episode,
yeah.
I also struggle at times because it's just like, okay, you know, like I looked away for a second to check the time or check my messages, and all of a sudden I don't know what's going on.
Yeah, no. As someone who has watched a lot of anime, I also had trouble following Garden of Sinners because I would look away for a second and then suddenly I'd be like, ah, crap, I don't know what they're talking about. it's one of those, like, I've watched a lot of subtitles, but I've never watched shows where I haven't been able to multitask at the same time. Like, I could still mm-hmm. do something. I could eat, like, at the same time, or I could play Fire Emblem Heroes or something goofy like that and then still follow the show. But when it came to Boogie Pop, when it came to Garden of Sinners, suddenly I was like, I can't do anything else. I have to watch the whole... I have to stay and just watch this. Otherwise, I'm not going to know what's going on. Because it gets super confusing, and they drop, like, little details that you would think aren't that important, but suddenly, mm-hmm. suddenly they are later on.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I agree. And I am, like, if I can't multitask and watch something, then... it's like not worthwhile.
I get that.
Because I love watching TV and I love all of that, but it's like, for the most part, I have to be able to multitask or else then I'm just not going to watch it.
No, I get that. Yeah, it's been something where, like, I would have to sit down and be like, okay, have I done everything else? Because the next half hour, I'm not going to be able to do anything except watch this show.
Yeah.
All right, but anyway. Do you guys want to start officially for this episode?
Fantasy
CO6. Is that podcast still going on?
I don't think so.
Oh man, that's sad.
I mean, even if it is, I'm not watching it. So therefore, by the properties of commutation, it no longer exists.
I think it's the property of disassociation.
Yes.
Anyway, let's start our podcast, which is still going on. Welcome everyone to another episode of League of Mediocre Gentlemen. I'm your host slash producer, Richard Martindale, and with me, as always, is Patrick Weaver.
Hi.
And joining us for the first time, his lovely wife, Brooke Weaver. You did take his last name, right?
Yes.
Yes, I did.
Okay. I'm always sort of weary because I've called you Brooke Stevens so many times that in my head I have to, like, switch it a little bit. But
it's okay. At work, I'm Brooke Stevens, but here and everywhere else, I'm Brooke Weaver. So I love getting to use my married name.
Aren't you Dr. Weaver? Aren't you Dr. Weaver now?
Technically, yes.
Yeah, sweet. We have actual professional on our podcast this time.
Well, so I really love this whole thing because, like, she took my name after the wedding and went through all that official paperwork, but she's too ashamed of my status in life and my family's heritage to professionally go by that. So really, it's kind of like Caesar kicking down his relatives in official capacities. At least that's what I'm going with.
Which one's Caesar in this?
That is so not true.
Is it Dr. Stevens for all of her professional friends and Brooke Weaver in your house?
Yeah. So like in these four walls and then in a very small amount of other places, it is Brooke Weaver. But professionally and all of her like work people, it's Brooke Stevens.
Wow.
Yeah.
I get that though. I've met you several times, Pat. I've hung up. I know.
Oh,
I see
man.
The reason why.
Oh, and then so there's this one time, this doesn't have anything to do with anything, but there's this one time where Brooke was doing something with the church or something, and she got interviewed for the newspaper. And so they wrote an article about whatever event was. It doesn't even matter what it was. And the newspaper reporter got our name wrong. And what was our last name in the paper?
Williams. I was Williams. Brooke Williams for like... It said Williams in there, I think, at least 50 times.
Yeah.
Is your middle name Williams?
No.
No!
Where did that come from, then?
It was just like you wrote it down wrong or something.
Yeah, the lady who wrote the article just had no idea and wrote it down wrong.
Maybe she did know, and she thought that, you know, Dr. Stevens sounds great, but Dr. Williams, that's the ticket to the top right there.
It's like Ted Williams.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But anyway, so it was also around the time where we started becoming active in our local church and nobody really knew us. And so the church would send us like cards in the mail and people would refer us to us as the Williamses because of the paper. So it took a little while to correct that.
They just go after the paper.
Right. We should sue them for damages. I didn't even think about this, but we should.
Well, what did you get?
The problem is the lady that wrote the article is technically also a member of our church, so we can't really go and sue the church.
We could go after the church.
You could just go sort of like make it super awkward where you like really emphasize your last names over and over again in front of her face, and then she just sort of feels like, oh man, how did I not catch that?
There you go.
Yeah.
I don't even
but that
know
was
these
like
people.
Almost a year ago now, so I, you know.
There's no statute of limitations on my unending suffering.
Oh, Patrick.
I think $5 million would make this go away.
Well, speaking of millions of dollars, do you guys want to talk about some million-dollar extensions?
I do.
So, yes.
All right, because I know Bogarts is nearing another one with a $132 million extension?
Something like that.
Yeah.
Wow.
And that's to go along with, what is it, Goldschmidt? Trout, Mike Trout, Eloy Jimenez, Brandon Lowe, Chris Sale. Did he get one as well?
Yes. So yes, Chris Sale started with the like strange, not necessary extensions, and then DeGrom got one as well.
Oh, that's right. I forgot about DeGrom. Man, there's a lot of them that have been like they started to become echoes in my head as they happened.
Ah, echoes. That connection.
So someone that did not get like a million, I don't think his extension was millions of dollars. I'm double checking right now. No, it was. It was $68 million. Yep. I have to say, I am thrilled that Nathan Eovaldi is going to stay with the Red Sox. I think he has a lot of potential.
You're welcome.
I don't know. I think he's going to be a lot of potential. So I know we're talking about extensions, and I have some other thoughts about them too. But like, I just want to say, since you brought up Eovaldi, that Red Sox pitching really makes me uneasy right now.
Oh my god!
Because it started off not well.
Sale? Did you enjoy that Chris Sale start?
No, and
we will
like,
be talking about that more later.
But it's just like I feel there's definitely a documented condition of like pitcher fatigue after World Series runs, and because of how they went to that well during the World Series run, I mean we might have the worst staff in baseball. This point,
I don't know about the worst staff because you still have Price, Sale, and
he's better than the Rays. Yeah. But
well, okay, let's calm down there. Oh, early first shots fired. Hey, we've since losing the first game, we've beaten Astros every single day so far. So starting off at least somewhat on the right foot.
There you go.
I'm just saying we're going to win 75% of our games this year.
Anyway, extensions. I want to talk about Paul Goldschmidt for a second.
Yeah, go for it.
So, yes, he's on my fantasy team. Yes, he's hit 4 home runs, including one again today.
Go for gold.
But, so, his extension, do you have the details in front of you? I should have brought it up. But, if I recall correctly, his extension was much less than...
It's $130 million.
Yeah, so... I'm pretty sure that the Diamondbacks offered him $200 million of an extension. Yeah. And he said, maybe I think it was about 2 years ago they did. And then he said no.
Well, here's my question. How long was the Diamondbacks' proposed extension? Because this one's only 4 years of the 130. So that means he's going to be making...
Yeah, it's like $30 million to use. Yeah. I don't know the answer to that question. I don't know, but like all I'm saying is that like especially in how the players' mindsets are now, and you've seen this with a lot of the signings and these extensions too, that like average annual value can take a little bit of a dip if they're willing to pay them in the long term.
Right.
So like, but anyway, I just found that really fascinating because Goldie seemed really happy in Arizona, and then he gets traded, obviously. And I didn't think he was going to go back to Arizona, but I thought it was going to be kind of an interesting time to try to sign him to an extension in St. Louis. And then essentially immediately they sign him to an extension, and he's going to be a Cardinal for a while. And so, like, I don't know. I was very surprised that they got the extension so quickly, and B, I was surprised that he accepted 134. And not try to get more or like more years, you know?
Yeah, that is weird. I don't know why he suddenly just, man, that feels like a slight against Arizona then at this point. Wow. Yeah, I forgot about the fact that Arizona had offered him like an extension deal or whatever.
Mm-hmm. It was a year. It wasn't like right before they traded him or anything. It was a year or two ago. But I found that kind of interesting from Goldie's standpoint. And I don't blame him. Like, Arizona's kind of rebuilding again, and I feel like the NL Central is perennially more of a competitive division than the NL West is.
Well, yeah.
Especially with the Padres coming up now.
I wonder if it's because didn't Arizona trade him? They traded him, right? It wasn't a free agent signing, right?
No, they traded him.
Okay. Cuz I was wondering, like, I wonder if he's now like with the I don't want to put too much weight into the humidor, but what if it's like something with the humidor and he's just sort of like, it's just nice to be outside again and not worry about that stupid humidor ruining my concentration. I don't know.
I'd be kind of disappointed if that came up, because like, it's not that I don't believe in that. I definitely think there's stats to back up the humidor thing, but he had a really bad first half of the year last year. And
yeah, but that wasn't that first half was not played all in Arizona.
Right, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. So.
Okay, so for the person who has no idea what you're talking about with Goldschmidt and a humidor,
he's a Jewish guy.
Okay.
I have no idea who is that? One of the pitchers?
Goldschmidt, he's a pitcher.
He's the first baseman for the Arizona Diamondbacks, but then got traded, and now he's the first baseman for the St. Louis Cardinals.
He was also my first round draft pick.
He was also Patrick's golden boy back in the day when he was originally playing in our league. His Mike Trout prospect, so to speak.
He was. Yep.
Well, yeah, I know who Goldschmidt is. Who is Humidor?
Oh, no.
What are you talking about? Like, I am so confused.
This is why we need more guests on the podcast.
This is true. Humidor is
like,
not
are
a
you talking about a humidifier?
Yes.
In, like, actually, a legit humidor?
Yes, a legit humidor.
Okay. Then why are we caring about Goldie and a humidor in Arizona?
Because
it's a good question.
Yes, actually, that is a good
question. She's one of today's 10,000, Richard. Have you seen that comic?
No, I have not.
So it's a what is it? XCKD. I always get this wrong.
XKCD.
No, yeah, XKCD. And so the idea is the two panels was like if we're assuming that like there's something that's common knowledge and that nobody knows it at birth and everybody knows whatever the piece of knowledge is at age 30, then mm-hmm. that means that on average about 10,000 people per day get like gain that knowledge. Okay. And so instead of chastising people for not knowing common things, you instead can praise them for being one of today's lucky 10,000. And so then the second panel, it was like, so have you ever heard of this like Mentos and Diet Coke thing? And then the guy's like, oh man, you're one of today's lucky 10,000. Get your coat. We're going to the grocery store.
pretty
Brooke
much.
Is today's lucky 10,000 for a humidor.
All right. So let me make this real quick. So the humidor, the idea is that because of how dry Arizona is, the baseballs tend to fly a little weird in terms of when pitchers. It's one of the better hitter parks as a result. Like, forget what is it that they're too light. I think that there's not enough moisture to make them light. I think is what it is. So like the humidor is supposed to try to make the climate in the stadium more neutral to like other ballparks to make the balls a little heavier to even out the playing field between the batters and the pitchers. And so when it first came in, people were a little worried because Patrick just got the XKCD. and so the idea would be that people like home run hitters like Paul Goldschmidt would start to suffer because his numbers might not, like, maybe what was a home run might now turn into like a double or a triple instead because it'll stay in the park.
They're humidifying the ballpark.
Yes.
All right. So, okay. Well, so hold on. Let's back this train up here. Okay. So, I'm not actually aware of them humidifying the ballpark. I've actually never heard of that before.
Okay. But like that's why you're here, Patrick, to help verify if I got this
correct. All right, yeah. So like the everything that Richard said is correct, okay, in concept, but like yeah. what I'm aware, the very first team to do this was actually Colorado. And Colorado plays outside, and so does Arizona actually. Like they have a retractable roof. But the idea, at least in theory at the time, was that the thin air, just like Richard said, like would cause the baseballs to actually leave the park more often than they should. Okay, so like,
yes.
So people would hit more home runs due to thin air, and pitchers would really suck. No pitcher ever wanted to play in Colorado because of that reason, and they could say that offenses would be inflated. What they did was they decided to buy humidors and take the baseballs, not change the atmosphere, and put the baseballs themselves in the humidor in order to make them heavier.
Oh my gosh, you're right. It's more like what you would do with like cigars.
Right.
Yes. Exactly. Okay. Wow. So yeah. Exactly what I thought about.
Yeah. There is no like tent around like Arizona's ballpark yeah. that like is making it the swamp. No, that's not.
That's yeah. Okay.
So the baseball. When you initially were starting to talk about this, I was like, are they putting the baseballs on humidors?
Yeah,
like,
that's what they're doing.
What in the world? Yeah. And then you had said something that made me think it was a person. And so then I was like, whoa, what's going on here? So we are putting the baseballs on humidors. Yeah, I could see why people would not enjoy that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the weird thing about Arizona was that I remember reading some quotes about like when they asked like players what their favorite ballpark to hit in was, they said Arizona, but they didn't quote it because of like how the ball flies. It was because like when it's nighttime, they said that you could see the ball so much easier in the desert against the desert backdrop than anywhere else. And so like in terms of like their eye coordination, it was just so much easier to sort of hit there. And so I never thought there was another reason that like, oh, it could be that the dry air is helping the baseball go like 15 feet farther or something. Apparently it was.
Yeah. Well, okay. And so, and the bottom line though, is that the concept is quite controversial. Like because if it was a huge deal, you would expect the Rockies to be infinitely, or at least they're pitching to be infinitely better after humidor use. And while they've studied it, and I don't have any numbers in front of me, and I think that
I actually do. It, it was, what is it, 1,198 1,198 runs scored in cores, and after the humidor, it was, I believe, 1,085? No, 1,005.
Yeah.
So it dropped the gap a bit. About 100 or 200 runs or something almost.
So like there is some science behind it. Like I think it's a hard thing to prove because of the control aspect, because I mean your pitchers change, your team gets better, it gets worse, whatever. But still, like that's the idea, and they've definitely been trying it around, but it's just, it doesn't make as big of a difference as I think that
It was 1,198 and then 989 with the humidor. That's
not bad.
Yeah. So it was, again, about 200 runs less. Yeah, you're still, like, seeing people slug. Like Coors Field is still the quintessential hitter's park where people are still belting away. So it's not, like, while the humidity was a factor, it is clearly not the biggest factor in terms of what is causing it to be a hitter's park.
So... this is actually something I don't know. Maybe you know this, Richard, but and I just realized how I phrased that sentence made it sound like I know everything. And I'm surprised that I don't. Anyway, like, so at Tropicana, do they like dehumidify the shit out of the place? Like, is it dry in there compared to outside? Because I mean, it's like 100% really. Humidity outside.
I mean, it's drier, but like it's air conditioned, so
right.
It doesn't. It sort of feels like you normally, I think the only humidity you really get from it are just from the people in the stands. Even though there's not as many people as, like, other stadiums, you still have enough to sort of create that humidity from body heat. And then the Rays tank that has, like, the Rays swimming in it. I think that's the only, like, moisture that I really kind of think of in that ballpark. Everything else is, it feels like a normal, to be fair, I've never been to another enclosed stadium, so I wouldn't be able to compare a non-Florida stadium to Tropicana, but it doesn't feel super humid. I'm not sweating.
Yeah, because they air condition it.
Yeah,
and the air conditioning will naturally removes the humidity. So I would assume that the Rays stadium and Minute Maid Park, right? Because that's where the Astros play.
Yep.
I would assume that those are probably very similar climate.
Probably
within the stadium.
We also both love
because
oranges.
Houston is guaranteed super humid.
Oh yeah, yeah. Well, isn't Houston's outside? Houston's inside, isn't it?
It's retractable.
It's retractable. Minute Maid Park. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Anyway, but so getting back to extensions, though. So do you think that this is connected with players being apprehensive about labor negotiations?
Yeah, apparently, I think I'm starting to think that. I wouldn't beforehand, but now that like more and more arbitration stuff is coming out, like, did you end up reading that article I sent you a while ago, Pat? About the belt that
belt.
Oh no. My god! About like how MLB like gives out like awards, like it's like a $20, like basically what we have for our fantasy. Baseball league winner, and they award it to the team that spends the least amount of money during the season. And it's like this belt or whatever that they give to them. And everyone kept thinking that it was like an urban legend or something stupid like that, and then ended up finding out that it was actually a real like thing that the MLB ends up giving out to the team.
That's kind of bad.
Yeah. It at first, you're like, haha, that's really funny. And then all of a sudden, you're like, oh, arbitration.
I mean, it's obviously not serious, but it's just, like, the image, you know?
Yeah, it was basically, like, that. Like, how did they not think that this would look bad?
Right.
So, yeah, that's the issue. Who was it? It was Mark Carrig on The Athletic who first posted the article.
I really like The Athletic.
I need to subscribe.
Isn't it a pay-for thing?
Yeah, unfortunately. But I kind of need... I'm getting... Since there's so many good baseball writers there, I've been kind of... Not to give a shout-out and free advertisement to them, but I have been really tempted lately to just pay for a month or something and see what... Like, just start reading some stuff. Because they seem like they all kind of have a really good a flair for their writing.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll have to look at it. They don't do like a physical magazine though, or anything, do they?
I don't think so, but I actually don't know. I haven't looked much further in.
Yeah, I'll have to look it into. We should probably not plug them any more than we already are. Anyway, yeah. So, anything more about extensions?
I don't know. Did you want to talk more about, like, I mean, I feel like you've touched on it in previous episodes about how much you don't like arbitration, and you enjoy you. I think you prefer more of these guys getting the money they're owed as opposed to going through that arbitration process. But I just wanted to see if you had anything maybe new you wanted to mention or
something. I have two things. First, just in a very simple way, and I mean, if this sparks a discussion, it does. But I feel that regardless of how anybody gets to point B, point A should be the players getting paid. Right. So, like, whether that means they get paid at the beginning and more players who make a lot of money don't pan out, or they get paid at the end and we don't have things like Dallas Keuchel and Craig Kimbrell, who, even if they are holding out for more money than they're worth, quote unquote, like, I mean, they have earned their right to be paid. So I think it's, regardless of how you get to that get paid point and the ramifications from it, they have to come up with some way to make that work, because it obviously is not working now. And teams like the Padres, which is going to be a very interesting experiment this year and in the next couple of years, who are trying to be just obscenely player friendly, and building a nice core with that system.
Yeah.
How that's going to sustain over the long term, and whether they're going to have like a generation now of players that are going to be Padres, or whether they're just going to be like everybody else, you know? So we'll see. The second thing that I wanted to say about the whole thing is, have you gotten, this might not seem like it's connected, but to me it really is. Like, have you guys seen that Let the Kids Play MLB commercial?
Maybe? Is it? Maybe. I don't know.
Yes.
It's on MLB TV a lot, like in their commercial breaks. Mm-hmm. But the idea is that it's like a big, I mean, it's a 30-second commercial, but it's like a big press conference room, and all these reporters are shouting questions at like a panel of all-stars. And they're all like funnily bickering back and forth. And there's a player from each team, like Aaron Judge and Mookie Betts and all sorts of people.
I haven't seen this commercial. I was thinking of the one with all the little girls playing like baseball, softball or whatever.
No, this is brand new for this year.
Okay.
No, it's the same initiative, just a different commercial.
So anyway, so like, I mean, it's funny, like the little quips back and forth between the teams plays off of rivalries a little bit and all that, and everybody's being funny. And at the very end, like one of the reporters says, "Hey, Mike," as in Mike Trout, "you have anything to say?" And he's sitting right in the middle and of all the players, okay?
It's going to be sunny and partly cloudy tomorrow.
Well, high so, like, high he's sitting right in the middle. He's being real calm, collected, like, isn't saying anything in this whole, like, escapade. And then he just, like, looks at the camera and he goes, "Yeah, like, just let the kids play." And, I mean, that's the shtick, right? But anyway, like, to me, that is the personification of a lot of what's going down in MLB right now, mm-hmm. because you have all of these characters, all these personalities, but the very best of the best, Mike Trout, who very well might be, if not already is, well on his way to being the best player ever. Just does not give two fucks about anything.
Yeah, he's cut from a different cloth than a lot of the other baseball players.
Right. And like, and
about,
how
he just cares about hunting, fishing, and chasing storms,
and weather. Yeah, weather. it's crazy.
Do you want to bet that like he takes his money and just like buys like those vans, like those storm tracker vans or whatever, and like starts in the off season just starts like tracking and chasing like tornadoes or some shit? Like,
I bet you there's a clause in his new contract that says he's not allowed to do that.
Damn it.
I was about to say the same thing, Patrick.
I would watch a show with Mike Trout chasing storms.
Someone will write that in there.
Damn.
You know, the Weather Channel could make a fortune off of viewership of that.
Mike Trout's not easy to advertise. Right there. There you go. Make a Weather Channel, off-season Weather Channel show.
And see, that's the thing, is I don't even think, like, after he retires or anything, like, I don't even think he would do that.
Yeah, unfortunately not.
Like, he would chase storms and do all sorts of bullshit, but he wouldn't do it for the Weather Channel.
And... oh well, I can dream.
He'd do it for the Mike Trout channel. He'd make his own channel.
Nah, it's not his thing. Really.
Sorry, I didn't mean to derail you with that.
No, but like but you're right, and that's really what I mean, is that like if Mike Trout was like, I don't know, like Manny Machado or Bryce Harper or any of these guys, like or even like a few degrees towards those players, I really feel like these labor negotiations and all these salary arguments would be going completely differently, because like he realizes it and he just doesn't care, but he has the biggest say in the entire argument, I feel, in this.
Yeah, no, I agree. Care. I mean, I wonder, because I didn't really look at like the collective bargaining agreement thing that's going on right now. I haven't looked into a lot of the stuff, but like when it came to like this free agency, with how long it took Bryce Harper and Manny Machado to sign, like it kind of makes sense that like people would just want to get their money now and not have to worry about it later. It's just like one less thing that you have to think about going down. I mean, and bonus, you get to skip arbitration. So I don't see a problem with it. It's just the only question I had during this whole time was when the really young, unproven folks like Eloy Jimenez and Brandon Lau got extensions and both had played a cup of coffee, if that, for baseball. And I was sort of like, wow, I can't believe these teams are throwing this much money. I mean, obviously it's not like the Mike Trout kind of money, but like still, it was like this bigger extensions you don't normally see for these kind of players. So I was just surprised to sort of all of a sudden see it. I mean, I know why they would do it. It's just, you don't see it that you usually, like, I'm like, you see it a lot more with Trout, with like Verlander, with Goldschmidt, with guys who, you know, and you're kind of like, I would like to lock these down for a while.
This might be a really dumb question.
Mm-hmm.
But so if Eloy would not have signed a deal, like if he was just a normal player, at what point would, what season or how many more years is what I'm trying to say, would the White Sox have control over him from today?
Oh, I actually don't know that.
Because like, so whether this is smart or not, and I think it is smart, if I'm understanding this correctly, it all depends on what the word extension means. Like if they're paying him an average annual value of oh my gosh, I just saw it and now I lost it.
So I'm only gonna
43 million over six seasons. This is a guarantee.
Yeah. So I'm going to base it on like what the Rays did with Matt Moore as the only thing I could think of. Which was when he got called up, he had a 5-year, $14 million contract. So you would look at some, it would probably be something similar to that with like an extension for, let me see here, three club extensions that would include something in the realm of like $39 million, or buyout year for free agency. That's something like, I would think that would be, so, roughly a $40 million contract. For a potential of 8 years, if that.
So like the reason why I say so is because like if we don't include the options, which are 2025, 2026, and are priced above $15 million a year, like if they're extending, if they're just paying him more money right now over his like first few years, and then let's say getting like two more years out of it at the end, so expanding that window. I mean, this is an amazing deal for the White Sox. Like, even if he just becomes a utility, like rosterable player, like it's still going to be a pretty decent deal over the seasons, and then they just buy him out for the $3 million, and it's fine. And so the reason why I said it depends on what the word extension means is because if they're just replacing his like $700,000 salary or whatever it is with a few million dollars, and they don't really get anything extra out of it, except for potential goodwill, then, I mean, it's really dumb because then he could just leave anyway when he was done, and they just paid him a lot more money for no reason. You see what I mean?
Yeah, I see it. And yeah. Honestly, it wasn't until I probably looked up the Matt Moore kind of deal and compared the non-extension thing to this extension thing that it started to click in that direction for me too, because now it suddenly looks... It actually kind of... So it's not even like that big of a deal now, because it sort of reminds me of like how... Like, this is really silly and very off the wall, but like, you know, Groundhog Day, where it's like, if the Groundhog Shadow sees a shadow, it's like 6 more weeks of winter. But like, if you look at the calendar, you're sort of like, well, that's when spring comes anyway. Like, it's not, like, you're not getting any more, he's just naturally turning into spring. So, I wonder if it's, like, it kind of reminds me of the same thing where it's like, oh, yeah, look, he just got this really big extension. I'm like, yeah, well, that's kind of what he would have gotten anyway, but, I mean, cool.
Yeah.
So, cool deal. All right, you guys want to start doing some overreactions, or you guys want
to talk about
extension still?
Oh, yeah.
All right. Patrick, who is your first candidate for you? Do you want to talk about you, Darvish? I don't want to take your thunder, but is that who you would want to talk about first?
So I do want to talk about Hugh Darvish and why I don't think it's that big of an overreaction, but that's not what I want to start with.
Okay. We'll wait for him then. Cause if we're both not exactly feeling like it's an overreaction yet, then there's no point in us bringing him up on this one. Let's save our real overreactions for people who we want to panic on.
The overreaction that I want to start with is a little less fantasy relevant, but still, is that starting with the ALE standings, and I'm going to read a few of these.
I gotta look up the standings. Okay, hang on.
So the Rays are in first place by half game.
Oh my god!
The Orioles took two out of three from the Yankees.
Oh my god!
Toronto, and then the Yankees and the Red Sox are bringing up the rear. But the Red Sox are not only in last in the East; they have a -10 run differential.
Holy crap!
And their pitching has been just dreadful. If you've seen any of their games, the offense has been trying to bail them out, and that's why they won one game. And the Mariners have tried their best to blow all four of the games, and they just only blew one. But still, like it's pretty bad. But I'm not going to stop there. I'm just going to say real quick. Okay, so Houston is in almost dead last in the West.
Well, it's because they lost to the Rays. They won one against the Rays, and then immediately lost the next three.
The Atlanta Braves have a 0 winning percentage right now.
That's impressive.
Oh god.
The St. Louis Cardinals are in dead last.
The Atlanta Braves, by the way, are currently losing to the Phillies 1-7 right now.
There you go. Miami Marlins are fighting for that NL East pennant. So, that's my first overreaction. Is just looking at the standings after 4 days. I love doing stuff like that because the only hope that in my opinion, the Cincinnati Reds and the Seattle Mariners are having of making the playoffs this year are happening right now.
Well, I mean, and even then, Cincinnati Reds are at an even 500. They've only won and lost one.
So. There you go.
It's not exactly, there you go. They're not exactly doing like hot stuff compared to... Oh, man.
Compared to those Baltimore Orioles.
No, 667, man. It's been years since they've seen that high of a number.
Oh, God, what team was it? It was the Reds. Because they won on opening day, and I guess they lost yesterday or something.
Yeah.
So opening day was the first time that the Reds had been over 500 in, like, 3 years or something. Like, it was a ridiculous number.
Okay, so you were talking about run differentials.
Yes.
How now that Goldie got traded, is Arizona Diamondbacks actually in where you think they'll finish this year? Because they have
-20.
They have
-20 run differential, and the Dodgers, should be noted, have a +20 yeah. run differential. Well, so there's a 40.
Well, because it's against the. Wait, the D-backs.
Didn't the Dodgers though break some record about like how many homers or runs scored or something in the first week of opening day or something?
I
saw something about that.
Maybe. I did not see that.
Break home run record with 8 is what they had, with 8 home runs. So opening day record with 8 home runs. So yeah, that's probably where they got their differential.
There you go. The D-backs offense is really bad, though. They won't finish in last in the West. I think that the Giants are going to finish in last.
Well, also, Greinke had a really bad day. I guess that was against Greinke when they had 8 home runs against them. That explains why my fantasy team's ERA just shot downward.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, anyway, I think their offense is going to be really bad, though.
Oh, no, certainly.
They have Kevin Crone, though.
Yeah. All right, so you want to talk about actual players, though?
Yeah. I don't want to hog the spotlight here, so why don't one of you guys go? And then you'll come back to me.
So I have...
Yeah, go for
it. Do you want me to go, Richard?
Yes, because I don't have one right this moment. I have an idea of one, but you go first.
Okay, so I have my guaranteed one. Here that
guaranteed
when
what?
We overreaction.
Oh.
So we were kind of talking about
the
this. So Chris Sale. Okay, opening day. You know, the phenom that is Chris Sale.
Yeah, I don't know.
Three innings pitched, 6 hits, 7 runs, 7 earned runs, 2 walks, and 4 strikeouts. I don't have how many pitches, but that's, you know, that is like beyond awful. Oh, on 76 pitches in 3 innings. So I just, you know, I see that, and we're talking about overreaction. You know, if you're not overreacting to that and saying, oh my god, what is going on with Chris Sale, like I'm putting him on the bench, you know, I could definitely see some people doing that and freaking out with Chris Sale, where I just think it's, like Patrick said, I think it's postseason fatigue for him, and that eventually, you know, then maybe like the third or fourth start, he might start to look like normal Chris Sale. That's kind of my big overreaction.
Hot take.
One.
I like it. All right, my overreaction is it's going to be on Jock Peterson. I think he's the best damn baseball player ever. This is his year. God. He's going to be hitting .380 with like 45 home runs. He's on pace for right now, I think 162. So that seems reasonable.
There you go.
So, I mean, Jock Peterson, man, if you don't have him, pick him up.
Who has him in our league? Do I have him?
I don't know.
I have him.
You have him. I remember looking at it.
You're gonna see some serious
nice.
Shit.
There you go, Richard. So how many home runs did he hit?
How many home runs is he gonna hit? I think.
No, how many has he hit?
Oh, he's gotten 3 right now.
Three
home runs in 3 games.
Yeah. Yep. The fall of Zach Greinke was directly in correlation to Jock Peterson hitting 2 home runs off of him. So it's been a great week for Jock Peterson owners, and hopefully for more good weeks to come. All right, Pat, do you have someone?
Yeah, so I am still holding Yu Darvish in my back pocket.
Okay,
but
that's fine.
I am going to go with my overreaction is that Tommy Pham is going to win the MVP this year.
Interesting.
and he's probably going to hit 400.
I believed you for the MVP, but the 400, you've gone too far.
Well, he's batting .370 right now, and he 4-for-11 so far. He beat the shit out of the Houston Astros. It's a good team. Hasn't hit a home run. I know chicks dig the long ball, but still. and he has 2 stolen bases so far. So he's the speedster from hell, and he's gonna have an OBP in like the 600s this year or something. It's gonna be great.
600s, yeah.
But yeah. So Tommy Pham is actually kind of an interesting case. Like, I know he's not gonna win the MVP, but he could really thrive down there in Tampa. Are you a fan of the Pham?
Yes and no. Like, I'm not a fan. Let me back up.
He's the third best outfielder in baseball right now.
Yeah, I'm always skeptical of literally every hitter on the Rays. I'm cautious. But what he came over from, was it St. Louis, I think? Was a fan of him then. Even if his attitude kind of like is a little wet blanket a lot of times, where he just, it always sounds like he doesn't want to be wherever he's at. Like, it never sounds like he's enjoying the moment. He always has to say something negative in his interviews. But like, in terms of his performance, yeah, I'm cautiously a fan of him. I think he could do well. It's just, when it's on the Rays team and in that stadium, and just, it just seems like the Rays are geared not to have hitters thrive, but more of defense and pitchers. It just, I'm always sort of skeptical when I see any sort of success happening with the Rays.
Yeah. So with Pham said, there are 2 more pressing overreactions that I think have more merit. First is Yu Darvish. We've already kind of spoiled this a little bit.
Yeah, yeah. We buried the lead, so to speak.
Now, I feel like I am particularly experienced to comment on this because of my experience with Carlos Martinez last year.
Sure. Also, I think you have historically owned Yu Darvish in the past, have you not?
I have, but that was when he was good.
Yeah, no, but you got to compare and contrast at least.
It's true. So the reason why I'm comparing him to Carlos Martinez is, Carlos Martinez entire...
Patrick, I'm sorry, I don't want to derail you for a second, but I looked at him and I go, oh, 338, that's not a bad ERA. And then I saw that that was his whip. I was like, oh my God! I almost threw up in my mouth.
yeah, it's a pretty bad start. But see, the great thing about it is that it really wasn't that bad of a start. Like, it was, and it was because of the walks, and we're going to talk about that. But, like, it was a classic Carlos Martinez post-injury start.
Right.
Now, C-Mart has always struggled with command his entire career, and Yu Darvish hasn't. But like, he would go through these periods. But then last year, he got injured, and he kind of had a series of injuries. And then after he came back, he just couldn't do it. Like, he couldn't get it over the plate. Now, when he did get it over the plate, he struck out everyone, like Carlos Martinez tends to do. But he couldn't consistently do it. And I can't tell you how many games I would start Martinez last year after his injury, where he would come in, pitch 4 innings or something, walk 5, and strike out 5, you know? And you're just like, what? Like, how is this even possible? Like, if you can't command your pitches and you're walking so many, like, how are you striking out so many? Well, that is, at least for through this first start, that is Yu Darvish. Yep. In his first inning the Cubs this year was 1 inning pitched, 3 walks, no hits, 3 strikeouts, no runs.
How many total pitches?
I don't know. It doesn't matter. It's such a paradox to be able to do something like that. And then his second inning wasn't any better. Like, he walked 4 guys in the second inning and struck out 1, and he ended up giving up 3 runs.
Yeah.
But like, the biggest problem with this isn't trying to be patient for a guy to kind of regain his form. It's that he walked 7 guys in 2 2/3. And like I told you, Richard, the other day when I was first commenting on this, like, he's going to be on my bench for his next start or two. And it really doesn't matter what happens from this point on, as far as hits allowed, strikeout numbers, innings pitched, it doesn't matter. Like, if he goes 4 innings
instead of an AL team. So would that, does Atlanta make you feel a little bit better than an AL team in Arlington Park? Okay.
No, like, if he goes 4 innings, even if he gives up a couple hits, let's say both of them are home runs, if his line next start is four innings, two or three hits, two or three runs, one walk, four Ks, mm-hmm. then I'll be like, all right, we might be able to move him back into the rotation.
Yeah.
But if his K to walk is anywhere close to what it is now, or through his first start, he gets like two or three more tries, and I'm just going to flat drop him. I mean, if somebody wants to trade for him, fine. But I saw that too much with C-Mart last year, and it's not going
to
change.
See, I thought you were about to give him like the shortest leash ever, where he had like one more game, and then you drop him. But you're actually about where I'm at with him, where it's like about three or four games is where I'm looking at him. Basically, end of April, how is he doing? And if I see a lot of these games as like the same as this, or like Ickley, or if not this, then like, you know, maybe he's walking like five people or something, it's slightly better, but it's still like only four or five innings at the most, then it's starting to make me worry a little bit if he's stretched out. So I don't know, I want to give him chances, and I'm gonna bench him, but it's certainly not a great start to the season after, what was it, like a tricep injury last year, and I think something with his back or his foot or something? I forget. Mm-hmm. All these injuries are merging together yep. in my head.
Well, it was like he wasn't hurt, and he was insisting that he wasn't, and he was just so bad last year.
Yeah.
And then
he was.
And we were praying that he was hurt, and then just kind of randomly it came out with this series of injuries, and then he was shut down. But like, but so what the Cards did with C-Mart last year is they turned him into a reliever. I mean, they kicked him out of the rotation, and then they turned him into a reliever. And I actually haven't been following it this year. I don't know if that's continued, but like, if Joe Madden's smart, if Yu Darvish has four starts and is like above 30 walks in four starts. Mm-hmm. Then, which is definitely possible, because he's on pace for 50 walks right now in four starts. Well, not that many. No, he's on pace for 32. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. But anyway, like if he has that walk rate still, like I think that that's something that he should consider. Like throw him in the bullpen, because then he can come out for an inning.
Based on the player sort of synopsis thing on Yu Darvish, like a little summary report, it kind of sounds like they could go that direction. That there's mm-hmm. that there's at least reason to believe that they might throw him in there to kind of give Darvish more time to figure it out. Which, if that's the case, that, honestly, throwing him in the bullpen might be the ideal situation, because mm-hmm. it would let him sort of figure things out on the major league level while not destroying our stats too badly, because you'd only have like one, maybe two innings at the most. I mean, okay, wait, you know what? As I say this, I'm like, you know, you'd only have one or two innings. He had 2.2 innings, Richard. How many? Right. Like, and look what he did.
So well, like, they throw him out for the eighth. They throw him out for the eighth inning, and he walks three. He strikes out three. That's a clean inning, bro. He's out.
Yeah. Oh. So maybe like one batter an inning, and they're like, all right, he got one out. Get him out.
There we go. Get him out.
Oh, man.
So that's my first serious one. My second serious one is Zach Flaherty? Yeah. The pitcher for the Cardinals?
Yep.
Jack
Flaherty. I thought I heard you say Zach, and I was like,
no, Jack,
I did too.
Did his brother come up?
Yes. Right. I had a lot of hits. I made a lot of excellent moves in the draft, and I'm just so happy with my team so far. I'm as happy as I've ever been at the beginning of the year. However, the one that really hasn't worked out too well, other than Yu Darvish, is Jack Flaherty. And he just got hyped so much.
Yeah, he did.
And I mean, I was high on him too prior to his just phenomenal spring, but he had one of the best springs ever. It's looking amazing. And while he didn't come out and throw a dud per se, it was definitely far below expectations. And so my second more serious overreaction is young Jack Flaherty going to have a lot of growing pains this year and then overall be a disappointment for fantasy owners?
I mean, possibly. He still hasn't really put it all together. Like, he just hasn't, he had a whole season last year, and then came. He came up 2017 for a bit, and then
I thought he came up last year.
I want to say it's 2017, but you might be right.
Pretty sure he was a September call-up.
No, he was 2017 September call-up, and then played all last year and was aggressively mediocre during this time. Mm-hmm. Where he was, you know, fine. But, like, it was his first year, so we were all kind of giving him a pass. But, like, the idea was that the talent he showed in the minor leagues, this will be the year. And, yeah, there's a chance that he might have bigger growing pains than we give him credit for. Yep. He's only 23, though, so I don't know if that factors into you, like, in terms of waiting.
I wish I was still 23.
No.
Me too.
You know who
else
does?
Wow, this just got really depressing.
Then she can sing her 22 song.
So let's go shotgun a beer to drown our sorrows.
Because we can. All right, let me go with someone overreaction as well. I think that oh my god, that Blake Snell was a flash in the pan last year, and he's going to be absolute dog shit this year.
I don't think that's an overreaction. I think that's 100% right.
He gave up 3 home runs and just all before before the fifth inning. It was just it was the ugliest thing I've ever seen. I don't want to cast too many aspersions, but like, man, that facial hair is the grossest thing I've ever seen on him, and it's just
all right.
Oh god, I think, and you know what, I don't think it's too far to say that I think they're connected. Last year he just had the weird goatee. Now he's got this weird like rape mustache going on too. I think that is affecting the balls. I think he's getting hit harder because they see that and they're threatened and they want to like stop that predator.
Oh my god.
That's
all right, I gotta look him up now.
I love you.
He is one ugly motherfucker. I'm sorry, Blake Snell, if you're listening to this podcast, but he is pretty ugly. But
I love you, Blake Snell, but yeah, he does look like a person who just sits and plays Fortnite all day.
Yeah.
Maybe that's it. Maybe he's been playing goddamn Fortnite.
Because he does play
of
Fortnite
spring,
all day. That is what he does.
Instead of spring training, he's playing Fortnite and now he can't fucking throw.
So is the mustache that you're seeing, Richard, is it the barely filled in mustache,
yes,
or is it the slightly more filled in mustache?
Oh man, it's hard to describe what I'm looking at.
It's bad though.
It's a little bit of both in a weird.
It's bad though. Like seriously, the goat, he's got the weird ass goatee, but
like,
the mustache has to go. He looks like a pedophile.
Maybe if they maybe you could connect them all together successfully, it would work a little bit better. But it's like fades downward almost in a Fu Manchu sort of style, like that. Mm-hmm. Just adds to the fact that he just doesn't grow it in all the way. So
yeah, he is not. Facial hair and him do not agree. He would be better clean. He'd be better off clean shaven.
It sucks because, like, as clean-shaven last year, although he did get the goatee by the end of the year, it just looks like he's so much younger than everyone around. So I understand his need to want to try to, like, help. Damn it, Patrick.
I just Googled Blake Snell mustache, and that's the first thing that came up.
For those, since
hold
this
on,
is a
I
podcast,
gotta look.
People can't see, it is Blake Snell, clean shaven, relatively, but with a very villainous mustache, all twirled up and everything, very
like
poorly photo, yeah, like painted on his face, as he's about to throw a pitch.
That is good. Hey, I Zip think lines, he would look
gas,
better if he grew that kind of mustache, that kind of handlebar curled up mustache.
Honestly,
he'd be
better
off than he is right now.
Yes, I agree. If he could somehow get that going, I'd be all for it, and I'd be like, Blake Snell, that is one handsome-looking man. But right now, no, sorry. He just
No.
And he's 26, so he is younger than Jack Flaherty that we were just talking about. But, man, Jack Flaherty looks like he's way older than him. I was thinking when I saw, like, Blake Snell, I was like, oh, no, he's probably, like, 21, if that. No, 26.
Yeah, Bryce Harper is, like, old man grandpa with, you know, his
beard.
Compared to that.
Yeah. So, yeah, first...
Sorry
first...
to derail you there, Richard.
No, you're fine. It was geared toward being derailed.
Well, but... you know, well, so, I think that Dan Mangden could have, like, is essentially has the same style of facial hair as Blake Snell. It's just that he grew it out and became Captain Hook. You've seen Dan Mangan's thing, right?
You gotta lean into that then, Blake Snell. You gotta be Captain Hook. That's even better. You're in Florida.
Yeah, he's the ace pitcher with the handlebar. Yeah. Oh yeah, he has embraced his mustache.
So like, take a look at how that grows though. Like,
yeah,
that could totally be Blake Snell if Blake Snell wanted to do that.
Oh man, yeah, I'd approve. And you know what's even better? If he like really played it up a little bit with being in Florida and like all the pirate territory and everything, he just starts to act or look like a pirate. Yeah, it could work.
Oh yeah, he could, you know, have his new thing be like Arg or something like that. Yeah,
start Twitch streaming Atlas or Sea of Thieves game or whatever.
Sea of Thieves, yeah. Oh man.
I'd watch that.
Yeah, no, he could totally embrace the pirate thing.
Hey, Richard, I need your hot take on Ray's matters.
Oh, geez, yeah, tell me. I got nothing but hot takes.
I drafted him. I drafted Tyler Glasnow, or however you pronounce his name.
Yeah, that's right. You got it.
To kind of anchor my relievers, thinking that he was going to be one of those opener type of guys / reliever for the Rays.
Yeah.
And he started against the Astros, and well, I mean, he didn't do badly. He did what I wanted Yu Darvish to do. He pitched 5 innings, 6 hits, one run, one rock, 4 Ks.
Yeah, okay. The only run was from the home run, I think.
I really don't feel like Glasnow is rosterable if he's a starter.
Listen.
So is he going to be a starter, or is he going to be reliever opener?
He is probably going to be a starter, I'll be honest. And if you don't want him, I would be more interested in trading you for Glasnow than I would be for Darvish right now.
Well, so here's my reason.
I would rather wait on Glasnow than Darvish. Not saying that I don't want to wait on Darvish, but in terms of who I would trade for to wait on, I would rather trade to wait on Glasnow than trade to wait on Darvish.
So here's my reasoning, and I am willing to do such a deal. So if you want to negotiate offline, then we can.
Yes,
but my reasoning is because the Rays are on record saying that no starting pitcher is going to see the third time around,
right?
For the entire year. So
we really got hurt bad by a lot of the Chris Archer antics that we've done, and so we're kind of traumatized. So no one gets to go third time around.
Yeah, so you're looking at 5 innings the whole year, which means that you're not going to get a whole lot of wins, which is fine on the surface, but Glasnow overall is a guy who traditionally struggles with command, and you need to get as many stats from him as you can. Well, I was hoping that he was going to be a reliever, because then he comes out for an inning or two, and he might get you a hold fairly consistently in that regard, and also not really hurt your counting or your ratios that bad, because it's only an inning or two.
Right.
Because he's a starter, he's never going to get a hold, ever, or the random save. He's not going to get enough innings to get a win, but he's going to pitch enough innings so that he can bomb your ratio stats pretty much every start.
Right.
Hypothetically,
yes.
I don't know. Like, what do you think? I'm crazy. Like, I feel like he's super valuable on the Rays from a fantasy perspective if he was a reliever, but it's almost like he's not valuable at all.
Well, the hard part is when you said traditionally, because he hasn't really been in the major, despite the fact that he has 4 years of major leagues in his belt. Of the 4 years, only 2018 is his full year. 2017 and 2016, he's come up at like really weird intervals and then gone back down to minor leagues. 2018, he was split between Pittsburgh and the Rays, where he did really bad in Pittsburgh. But the moment he hit the Rays, he started doing a lot better. So it's hard for me to say that he'll destroy your ratios. It's just that if I'm looking at this as almost like, hey, this could be what we thought. Like this is Glasnow first real year, I have no idea what to expect at this point, because with the Rays giving him kind of like a little bit more leeway on what he can do, It could be really good. It could be really bad. I'm kind of going off at this point on what the prospect records are like when the scouts were raving about him. But that's not exactly, still not really into what your strategy is going to be, because if that's the case, then you're probably looking at a decent but not great pitcher in a Rays system that won't be giving you wins or holds still. He might not destroy your whole, your ratios, but like the counting numbers probably won't be there either. So yeah, I could understand why you wouldn't want to roster him, if, especially with how you build your team up around and how you specifically, Pat, have built your team. It would be the wrench being thrown into it that you would be like, the potential's there, but because of the way the Rays are running things, it's kind of ruining the way I'm running things on my team.
Well, if Glasnow's a starter, and I just want to make sure it's a reminder for all of our listeners, all of our podcast. If Glasnow's a starter, I only have three relievers this year. And none of them are close. Well, no, none of them are closers. Adam Ottavino, who's like seventh in line in the Yankees, which is a damn shame because he's such a good pitcher.
Well, the Yankees have like three really good like relief pitchers. That's hard to kind of stack them all together and say,
right,
like,
really damn better. Shame. Yeah, really is. And then Sir Anthony, and then who's on the Mets. And so like, so I have a shit ton of starters, and it's my stated strategy from our draft podcast, and it's going to be my strategy all year. Like, I was actually hoping that Glasnow was going to be like a breakthrough reliever for me.
Yeah, kind of like that's kind of Andrew Miller kind of a player instead.
Mm-hmm, exactly. For last year, kind of, if we're just doing a one-to-one comparison, I was hoping he was going to be like my Kirby Yates, who literally came out of nowhere, but yeah, was suddenly amazing. And so it doesn't seem like that's the case. And I mean, I got a lot of starters, and I got a lot of starters that are way better than Tyler Glass.
Yeah.
And so yeah, so that's kind of my thinking here. And if I'm trying to nurse along Yu Darvish into being something better, like I kind of have to pick and choose, you know?
Yeah, I agree. You kind of don't have the room for the umpteenth starter. Now, Glasnow could still become that, but I don't know.
Right. It seems like unless he just completely tanks, then he's going to be a starter this year, right? But yeah, if he completely tanks, you don't want him on your team anyway, so.
Yep. Nope. Yeah. That's true.
Anyway. Cool.
Yeah. All right. Cool. Brooke, do you have any other overreactions?
I do.
Yeah.
I do. Uh-oh. So this is someone who I picked up because, you know, I had drafted people that were injured and people that that then became injured, and I was like, crap, I need to find someone halfway decent. And I am extremely thrilled with this pickup. Uh-oh. Before I tell you who it is.
There's a huge build up here.
Is it Jake Lamb?
And no, it is not Jake Lamb.
Jake Lamb's playing pretty good, though.
Isn't he? No, he's not. He's 1-for-8.
Yeah, Jake Lamb, no. Jake Lamb is not doing very well.
He's the same as he's always been.
Jake Lamb is not doing very well. So this person I'm very happy with, and this person is Enrique Hernandez.
Oh yeah, and
he has been doing very well, and I was shocked that he was available.
Shocked.
I was shocked that he was available and that I was able to pick him up. And I am, you know, overreacting through the moon right now. Super, super thrilled with him.
Oh, yeah. He was part of that offense. That is the reason why the Dodgers broke that first opening day record, because he got two homers. And
he did get two homers that day.
Yeah. He's on a hitting streak, technically. He's on a hitting streak.
Technically.
And he looks like Gronkowski. So, I mean.
He does. He does.
It's a whole package right there.
Yeah. So, and the best part about it is when I went to add him, because ESPN, you know, ESPN is great and all, but seriously, their like fantasy website this year has a lot of kinks and needs some help.
Sure looks.
They
pretty,
had. They had him as I can't even remember. They had him as like some like third baseman that was really bad. That
Patrick was telling me about this. Yeah. You guys were having trouble.
That was like his name and his picture, and like I went to like it was just it was a mess. But so then I added him, and it was actually him, and I was happy. So that is my overreaction. I am thrilled with Enrique Hernandez. Next podcast, ask me if I'm still thrilled with him, and we'll see.
There you go.
Oh, we will.
All right. So I know I'm putting you both on the spot, unless you have more overreactions. But
no, I'm good for now.
So what is your favorite storyline so far? Of the four game season.
Four games.
Including the spring training, if you want to include. What's your favorite storyline so far? And I can go first to let you guys
think. Yeah, you go first because I've never been a fan of storylines, so I don't pay attention too much to them. But let me hear what you say, and I might all of a sudden pop one in my head.
Yeah, you can draw inspiration.
Yeah.
My by far favorite storyline of 2019 so far is Yasiel Puig.
Okay.
Because so he left the Dodgers and is on the Reds, and it was he is this all this huge hoopla about from him himself about how he wasn't trying on the Dodgers because they treated him wrong and blah blah blah, and you're gonna see the real Yasiel Puig now, and he's like he's gonna. And when I say he is just like talking in the first person, like I'm going to be the best of the best and like prove everybody wrong and blah, 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 blah. You're going to see the real me, the real ball player. Well, through two games, he's 0-7 with 4 strikeouts.
Yes. And I'm aware of this because he's on my team and he is absolutely awful.
He's pretty much dog shit so far. And so like, it's such a great storyline for me because it's just like, for me, I never liked Yasiel Puig a lot in the first place because he just...
He's a hard person to like. He's got the face that my fist would love.
Right. But I love the concept of a guy who, like, who feels his ego bruised a little bit. And he's like, no, it's not because I'm bad. It's because I wasn't trying. But and then you're just waiting for it. He's like, because I'm going to be trying now. And so now he's trying, guys. And he's 0-7 with 4 strikeouts.
Okay. Yeah, well, can he go back to not trying and maybe he can get a damn hit? Like, seriously. Yeah, he is... I'm not thrilled with him right now because he is on my team. It's
funny as hell. I love it.
So, Patrick, do you have another storyline? If not, I've got one.
No. I only have one favorite. Okay. Just like you. So unless I'm allowed to have multiple favorites now. Is that correct?
So, I don't know all of the details about it, but I am very touched and like
Brooke
that
is a family show.
I know.
No, it is not. You're this is a this is like a college show or something. We don't care about little kids.
Yeah, this is so I am very thrilled and very happy that the Mariners did what they did for Ichiro.
Oh,
yeah. That's a good moment. That actually was a good story.
Like, yes. That's a really sweet storyline, tugs on the heartstrings, and oh crap, what is his name? They kept going on and on about
Kikuchi.
This.
Kikuchi.
No, not Kikuchi,
Susan.
Dean Gordon is apparently, like, grew up idolizing Ichiro, and was just so thrilled and so honored that he could play with Ichiro on his last game in Japan. And they were going on and on about it, and I guess in Nesson showed this thing where he like D Gordon like bowed to Ichiro at the end of the game, like when he had his like his fan call and all that stuff.
I don't want to take away from that because I think that was awesome, but like. How is it that D. Gordon always is, like, in the middle of these, like, emotional things that have nothing to do with him? Because he did the same fucking thing with Jose Fernandez when he died and was, like, crying and having this huge emotional thing about, like, how much the guy inspired him and how much he meant to the team and hit, like, the emotional run. I'm like, I'm not saying that this is, that he's, like, some sort of, like, attention whore. I'm just saying that somehow he's involved in all of these things. And either D. Gordon is way more popular than Major League Baseball than I give him credit for in terms of the player base. But, like, or this is just, like, really just a D. Gordon thing where he just, you know, latches onto a player and loves them.
I think we have a tremendous amount of East Coast bias. And Brooke, you've been to Seattle before, right?
Yeah.
It really struck me how strong and widespread and just fanatical Seattle sports are in the Pacific Northwest.
Really? And I didn't expect that.
Well, and so that's the thing, is that, like, if you live on the East Coast or in the Midwest or, you know, where we live, 6 hours away, a flight away from Seattle, you don't really see many Mariners, Seahawks, whatever fans around here. And so you just kind of get the feeling that they're just not very popular.
Mm-hmm.
But that's actually not really true. Like, it's literally like the Redskins or something in D.C., where, like, it might not be the most popular team nationally, but, like, every single fucking football fan in the D.C. area is, like, is Redskins, blah, blah, blah. Right. You just can't, like, stop hearing about it.
Right.
Yeah. No, that's true. I would say that's true.
Like, in the Seattle airport, they have, like, an entire section dedicated to the Seattle Seahawks. It's really weird.
It's kind of cool, though.
Yeah.
I mean, it's cool, but it's, like, it's you don't go, you don't fly into Kansas City and they have, like, a wing of the airport dedicated to the Chiefs. Like, it's just not...
No.
Hey, Peck, I have a question. No. And maybe you don't know this question, or maybe this just adds to yours a little bit more.
I know everything.
Because this is in relation to yours. But why does Yasiel Puig feel the need to lick his baseball bats? Like, every single time
what?
I see... Like, every
yeah,
time
he
I
does
see
it.
A picture, he's like, it's got his big tongue.
It's something he does. Yeah.
And his tongue is always looks a little bit bigger than what it should be. But it's like, lick it up, though. Like,
wait.
He's very popular among the ladies.
Why Yasiel Puig?
He treats...
God, he is!
Yeah, it's something he does.
Why is he licking... the baseball bat.
Because he knows how to treat the shaft really well.
Like, and you're right, Richard. He has a very wide tongue.
Oh, my God. In real life, though, somebody, when the Dodgers were in the playoffs a couple years ago, I believe, somebody did ask him why he licks his bat, because he does it all the fucking time.
Yeah.
The reporter asked him, and he said, bring up the quote. Quick, so I get it right. He said, "I make love to the bat, and he pays me back with hits." That's what he said.
Was there a translation wrong in there or something? Does he know?
No.
Okay.
I make love to the bat. CBS Sports. Here we go.
Yep, and he pays me back with hits.
I mean. Has Yasiel Puig,
so he knows anyone, how to handle a shaft. That the, you are correct.
If he's straight, then he needs to know what it looks like. He's sending out mixed signals, is all I'm saying. Alright, so I guess I should pick my best story. Man, I don't know. The Ichiro one was good, and that one probably would have been mine if I had remembered it. But you know what? I'm going to take a page from Pat's. And it's just, like, the story that I'm enjoying, it's sort of ongoing, is the Phillies and the Harper relationship of 2019, where within, like, what is it, two and a half,
yep.
over, under two and a half.
Like two and a half at-bats or something.
That they would boo him, and sure enough, they yep. did. And it's just, you know, I think...
That was great.
I think it's just one of the most entertaining things, because... it's trial by fire for Harper. He's leaving a team and a community where everyone kind of has to love everything, or else you're kind of weird, because that's what DC's area is like. And where women would have just, like, you know, thrown off everything to be with Harper or have him notice them. And now you're going to Philly, where they are horribly judgmental people, and they're just not afraid to let you know about it. And I think it's going to be very interesting and very fun to sort of watch the dynamic as the year and years go on. So that is my story so far, at least. If I suddenly think of another one, I will. But that was
really great. Like, well, and so I think that it really hits home because Harper stayed in the division and went to a team that just plays all the time.
Yep.
And is geographically close. Like, I think that if I don't know, like, if who would be a good example? Like, if Buster Posey signed with the Yankees, you know, I still feel like it would be a funny story that if they started booing Buster Posey within a period of time.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it would be like there's no familiarity there. Like, nobody at Yankee Stadium really ever gets to see Buster Posey.
True.
And so there would be a little bit more of a warming up. I mean, everybody's getting familiar with new locations, blah, blah, blah. No. Bryce Harper essentially lives half the year in Philadelphia, even when he played for the Nationals.
Yeah.
And so it's almost like he was almost already there. So everybody already was familiar, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, Mark Feinson on Twitter posted that one where it was like, if you had under 2.5 on the number of at-bats it would take for Harper to hear any boos in Philly, you win. Bryce Harper strikes out with a runner on third, here in the fourth, bringing out a handful of tears. Not many, but not none either.
Right. Not none either.
Philly really does have a thing about striking out at like the opportune time where like if you got like called looking, or if you got like maybe a fly or something, like if you got a fly or a ground out, they won't like say too as much. But like when you strike out on or whatever, then they suddenly like eat you alive. All right, guys, do you have anything else you want to talk about with this baseball season? Any good, last thoughts, predictions, worries?
I'm really worried. So, and this isn't a pure overreaction. So it just didn't fit into the narrative. But I am very worried about the Red Sox. I think that their offense is fine, and it's going to be just as good, historically good, as it has been. Really worried about how they're going to make a playoff run with their pitching staff. I don't think they're going to finish in last, or that Chris Sale is going to be the worst pitcher on the planet. It's just like, there's not a whole lot to be hopeful for right now. And if you have even a slight regression from like David Price and Chris Sale, there's nobody in the bullpen right now that can really back that up. We're a team that needs front end starters to succeed. And if we struggle even part of the year trying to find that identity with our starting pitching, then I think that we'll still make the playoffs, but I think that it would not surprise me if we're on that wild card bubble.
You could always sign Dallas Keuchel.
Oh God.
Oh gosh. No. So to add on to that, Patrick, one of my big concerns of the Red Sox is their infield fielding. What? Because, oh my goodness, I would like to see Brock Holt play more, because Nunez is a disaster. You know, he makes way too many errors playing second, and, you know, something needs to happen, and Rafael Devers is not the greatest third baseman defensively.
God, I hate Devers. He's just the worst third baseman, period.
You know, so it's...
Trade for Jake Lamb.
So I am very concerned that their defensive, you know, the infield defensively is going to cost them some hits and runs that they shouldn't have to, that they shouldn't. That's one of my big concerns for the Red Sox.
So this is, I didn't want to put this in an overreaction because this is very much in my team favor, but like, you remember how I had all that, like, oh, I don't want to draft Daniel Murphy because I don't really need a second baseman, and I kind of want to get, like, somebody else, and then the draft happened, and I had to draft Daniel Murphy because there was no one else better? Well, guess who's going on the goddamn injury list? It's Daniel fucking Murray!
And... No, not the Murph man!
Oh, God damn it. Like, can this season just fucking be cool for once? Like, geez.
I love every second of that. That just makes me so happy.
God,
Jose Abreu's hit a bunch of home runs.
I'm aware. Daniel Murphy, 1-for-10, so he gets to go on the injury list after torpedoing my average and then just like never see him again. God, that was my first pick. That was my, I kept Mike Trout the first, and then second pick was right there. Oh.
Well, Daniel Murphy was your second round pick.
Happy. Yeah, it was the first one I got to actually pick in the draft after the keeper.
This entire segment is filling me with joy.
Like, what? Like, I love this. And he's not even on the injured list thing. And also, I have to talk and say that the IL and the DL, that still pisses me off, because the DL, there's nothing wrong with the DL. It's not, and he's not even like eligible yet. So I'm just sitting here looking at him on the move, and they're like, "Yeah, he might go on the IL. He's just sort of like we expect him to be on the 10-day for a fractured finger."
Oh, thanks.
And look at
Mickey got hit in the hand yesterday, but he did not break it.
Yeah, injuries came back. X-rays came back. What is it? He hasn't. No, they confirmed a fracture. So,
oh, that's pretty bad.
Yeah, gonna be good. And it's his left index finger, and he bats. Well, I guess it doesn't matter. You need both hands.
Yeah, you need both hands. When
both
you
hands
bat.
Are bad. Yeah.
Which hand? What is he? Right-handed or left-handed? Which hand does he throw with?
Oh, that's a great question. He throws right-handed, so he's good. He bats left-handed, though. God damn it.
Didn't he? Oh, isn't that what happened to him last year? Didn't he like break a finger or something last
year?
Yeah,
some.
There's something having to do with his hand. Yep. I think.
Oh man,
this is what happens when you don't like work the shaft with your mouth a little bit.
Yeah, there you go. That's exactly what it is.
So I do have one more side note here.
Bring it on! Bring it on! It's
the episode that never ends.
And then we'll be done. So one of the things, one of my favorite pastimes is knitting, and I'm an old lady. So Patrick has challenged me this year to use some of the yarn that I have stashed. Mm-hmm. And my challenge is for every Red Sox win, I have to knit a sock.
Yes. Oh, I like that. Is that a
Red Sox? So far, we're not doing so hot.
No, so
that makes the work easy for you.
It does right now. I had something else I had to finish up this weekend, so I just started while we were on the podcast. I started the sock for win number one because we have played four games and only won one, so I'm very thankful for this. But the sole of each sock will get the number of it stitched into the sole with whatever win it is. So. Today's
number one with number two.
Yeah, so today will be today we'll get a one stitched into the sole of the sock.
That's really cool. I like how big are these socks? Are these like tiny little socks? Or are they like could you wear them?
No, they're socks for people to wear. Cool. If you're lucky enough, Richard, you might get a sock.
You might get a red sock.
Are they all red?
No, today's is blues. We got a navy, a gray, and kind of a lighter blue.
Oh man, I didn't know you guys were Tampa Bay Rays fans. This is awesome.
We are.
Listen, those colors, perfect.
So, and the one will be done in red because it's a good contrasting color for this. So
true.
So there we go. So fun facts, exciting things.
Yeah, no, I love it. I think that's pretty cool. All right, I think that's a good note to end on, guys. On a uplifting one after my negative rant there. So. unless you got anything else, guys, you want to talk about any last words or any recommendations or anything you guys just want to update on or anything?
Nope.
I don't think so.
Awesome. All right, then from all of us here at the OTN Network and the League of Mediocre Gentlemen, we want to wish everyone a wonderful week and I guess the first weeks of opening fantasies for everyone to have a good luck on that. If you have any questions, comments, concerns, criticisms, anything that starts with the letter C,
email them to yourself.
Email them to the League of Mediocre Gentlemen at otnmedia.org. There is also a Twitter. It's at the LOMG podcast. There will be a Discord link in the description below. There will also be, I believe, a link for our Twitch, and there are Twitch streams every Tuesday and Thursday at 8 p.m. For me, it's 8:30 on Tuesdays. I stream usually something involving Fire Emblem. Last week I did Fire Emblem Heroes. I got to my tier 21 top rank. So next week will be interesting. Monday is the Level Up podcast with John and Joey. I believe also at 8 at Twitch.
Listen to us.
And then last but not least, Patreon. We have a Patreon page at patreon.com/OTN. We would love to have any contribution you guys can offer. It helps us out eventually.
Did you know that Patreon is now accepting little bits of string?
Are these strings also made into socks?
Eventually. And those socks are given to poor Guatemalans. So please donate to our Patreon so poor Guatemalans can have socks.
God. So anyway, guys, thank you so much for coming on. Hopefully we get to actually record tomorrow, because I'm really excited to talk about timelines and weird things and everything else in between. So, cool. All right. Then, everyone, have a good night and stay at least mediocre level.